the show.
Welcome to The Boundless Show. I'm your host, Lisa Anderson. We are back this week for the second half of our Artist Roundup series, and I hope you had fun last week listening to Jeremy Camp, Rebecca St. James, and Evie, her mentor. We had a good time chatting with them and are glad that we were able to provide those interviews to you. Well, this week we have two very different artists. First up, we have Molly Jensen. Molly is an independent artist who we had by phone, actually, and she has just released her new album, and is kind of hitting the scene. She's from Southern California. We had a great time talking to her and learning about her music and her influences. So you'll be sure to want to tune in and hear about her and as well as catch her new album. So that's important. Also important, though, is an interview that we are bringing to you, which I personally thought should have had an entire week of its own. And really, if I'm going to be honest, I would say month of its own. But Ma and Dave shut me down. So please write to editor@boundless.org and rebuke them for that, because you will be disappointed. But you're going to be excited because I had the opportunity to talk with, his initials are BG, Bill Gaither. He was out here in Colorado Springs for a homecoming concert. Those of you in the listening audience who are faithfuls, and you know I love you, remember that I basically just love him and his music and all the Southern gospel artists that follow him and sing with him in the homecomings. Well, I had the chance when he was here at the World Arena to sit down and talk with him. I pulled Dave along with me at the last minute, and we had the opportunity to talk about his music, about his history of music, all the songs that he's written, which are tons, people. And I need you to just do some research before you even listen to this interview and just listen to a few of his songs, because you will be blessed. And then we just talked about his thoughts for this generation as an older guy, and just what his hope is for our generation and how we can really stay strong in the fight for the kingdom, and just anticipating the Lord's return and what we have to look forward to. And just really looking back on a legacy that he has had of just a legacy in the faith of serving the Lord for this many years. So I get all excited. You will hear it in my voice talking to him. I had my photo taken with him. Maybe I'll post that too, because that's exciting. But you need to catch this, everyone. You need to catch this interview because it is amazing, and it's basically landmark. And quite frankly, what other podcast for young adults gets Bill Gaither? None. None of them do. Okay? So make sure that you listen in. Molly Jensen and Mr. Bill Gaither. Have fun.
There's a road called the Holy Highway. That once was a desert land. Very soon you'll hear the sound of a holy marching band. Everlasting joy upon them. There's a remnant strong and true. We bring the song back to Zion. We bring the praise back.
Highway.
right, for this week's culture segment, I am joined in the studio, not really in the studio, but actually by phone, by Mark Joseph and Molly Jensen. Mark is actually the founder and CEO of the MJM Entertainment Group, which I guess that maybe includes, or maybe this is separate, Bully Pulpit Records. And then he's also the host of BullyPulpit.com. He's done a lot of stuff in the past, and we'll talk about that a little bit, working with a lot of big artists, everyone from Lauryn Hill to POD, Sixpence None the Richer, and then produced the soundtrack, the rock soundtrack for The Passion of the Christ. And he got a GMA Music Award for that. So that is pretty cool. I'm sure he has a lot to say. And then Molly is actually an artist on his label that just released an album. She just released Maybe Tomorrow. She is actually from Southern California. Californians represent. I'm originally from the Bay Area, so that is very exciting. We're going to talk a little bit about this album as well as a few other themes that are presented here. So welcome to both of you, Mark and Molly.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Yay. Tell us a little bit, Molly, about your move into the music biz and how you got to know Mark in the process.
Well, I've been singing forever and grew up in choir and doing musicals and stuff, and I started working on my own stuff, and I'd had some music down, some songs ready, and Mark and I have this mutual friend who kept telling each of us about each other and saying, you guys need to meet each other, you need to meet each other. And we finally did, and I gave him, you know, the songs that I had, and he liked it and was wanting to start a label, and it worked out perfect. I was just there at the right time.
Wow. Okay, now everyone, when you hear people or when you see people write about you or whatever, they're always going to compare you to people. And I saw the comparisons like Sheryl Crow and a few others, Amy Mann, I think I saw one of them. How would you describe your music if you had to just give a little summary of it?
I actually usually use Sheryl Crow as a reference, but I say...
Not counting the tumultuous relationship with Lance Armstrong.
Right, exactly. Right.
Good.
Exactly. Except for I basically say that my music is folky pop, and then when people say, what does that mean? I say it's like Sheryl Crow, but not as country.
Mm-hmm. That's good.
That usually works. And then people go, oh, great, I like that style. And then they're on my team.
Yeah. Okay. Now, so what gave you the confidence to put yourself in the hands of Mark, though?
Well, I had gotten to know Mark over a period of, I don't know, like a year. And before we had started even talking about really music stuff. And so I had gotten to know him outside of the music business and as just a person. I had gotten to know his character and just who he is, and I just really liked him. And it helped me because he was starting this label, and I loved the idea of that. But he was also in a relationship with Network Music Group, which is a really, really great label, and I've heard a lot about Network. And so I think that helped kind of pull me over the edge. When he was talking about, you know, if it was just him saying, hey, I'm starting this label, you should be my first artist, I probably would have been like, Anyway, so it helped that I knew who he was, and outside of the music business, that definitely helped.
Yeah, that's good. Tell us a little bit about the album itself. Again, I want to say the album is Maybe Tomorrow, and it features, I think, 13 tracks, so that's a pretty packed album.
Yeah.
Right. 13.
Yeah.
What is? Would you say this album is pretty biographical, or kind of what's the take on it as far as what people will hear in the storytelling?
Yeah. You know, I hadn't ever written my own stuff before I started working on this album, and I started working on this album because a friend of mine he wasn't a great friend, but a mutual friend of a friend. We also went to college together. His name's Greg Laswell, and he called me out of the blue and had heard that I was starting to kind of work on my own stuff and was struggling with writing, and he just said, do you want to get together and work on some songs? And we got together and started writing, and halfway, you know, about four songs in, I realized that I was making a record. Like, it happened so backwards for me, which was really cool. So anyway, when I started writing it, it wasn't like I had a ton of songs, and I came to this producer and said, hey, let's do a record, here's 40 songs. It was like, hey, let's do a record, here's my first song that we just finished, let's record it, here's the next song. And so it's very biographical in the sense that I had just broken up with a guy and then started working on his record. So the first three songs were really about him. And then I had this period of being single where a lot of my songs were about other people or were about dealing with issues that had nothing to do with relationships. And then I started dating another guy, and so there, some of the songs were about the beginning of that relationship, and then the through like the whole entirety of that relationship into the end of that relationship. So it's definitely very, very biographical.
Wow. Okay. Yeah, which is very, you know, for our audience is really going to resonate because we're, you know, younger adults and, you know, pretty fascinating. A lot of people walking through the same types of things.
Right. And I went into an amazing relationship and got dumped at the end of it. And that all made it onto the record. And I love that. Like, I can look back at that now and be really grateful for the way all that happened and the timing of all of that, because I know that a lot of people who have heard my songs, and I've had a lot of people come up and tell me that the songs that I wrote when I was like in the pit of my despair, you know, those are the songs that are really hitting people because they're feeling that too. You know, it's like we're all experiencing love and loss and in different ways and at different times. But I hope and I feel like so far my songs have met some people where they're at, and that's what I want.
Yeah, that's great. Now, do you think, as you've been out and about talking to folks and you're on the road and obviously on MySpace, especially in our generation and younger, do you think there are different ways that people deal with love and loss, or what are the similarities as well between those who, you know, maybe are dealing with it through a lens of faith versus not? And how can you speak into both of those situations?
That's a good question. Obviously, we're all dealing with it, and definitely we're going to all deal with it differently. And some people with faith are going to deal with it differently than other people with faith. And, you know, the other way around. So I feel like, I don't know, I just am hoping that people will see hope no matter what, no matter where they're at in their life, no matter if they have faith or not have faith, I hope that they will see that there's hope at the end. And whether they're ending a relationship and they see the hope in the fact that they were in a bad relationship and so they're in a better place now, or they'll be in a better place, or they were in a good relationship but it might not have been the right person for them. I just hope people see hope. And I hope that my songs help people see hope.
Sure. Okay.
Answer your question.
Yeah. No, that's good. I do want to get a little bit into, and Mark, you can maybe weigh in here as well. The idea of the Christian music industry, and I know you, I don't want to say, like, for me to say that you have taken them to task, Mark, is a little bit strong. I don't know. I mean, I don't want to have you, you know, pitted against them or anything, but, you wrote an article called How to Fix CCM, that was featured on ChristianMusicToday.com. And it's a pretty fascinating, look as from someone who's in the industry into Christian record labels and kind of the marketing of Christian music and the whole debate that there is around what is, you know, music is music and what, you know, the lyrics and how does that add or how does that detract and how do you market this? And if you have a message of hope that you want to share with the world, then why, in fact, are we only doing that with a small niche group who, quite frankly, you know, already knows the message from their own pulpits, ideally, and trying to get that message beyond that? What, Mark, talk to us a little bit about your experience in the industry and how this message has come out of that.
Yeah, my background originally was I would find these great artists and put their records out overseas, and some of them were artists like Sixpence None the Richer and others, and I was able to give them kind of new careers in other countries as normal artists that are not in the religious section of a store. And so after about 70 or 80 records like that, you know, one day I was on the internet when the internet first started. Am I that old? and I was looking at, for some reason, I was surfing on the Negro Baseball Leagues. And it just really hit me with a, you know, like a thud that this is what I was experiencing. The Negro Baseball Leagues, as they were called back then, were comprised of these amazing baseball players who just, you know, happened to be black. And because of that, they weren't allowed to be in the major leagues. And I felt like that's what I was encountering in the world of Christian music. People tend to, you know, say, oh, Christian music stinks. Well, it's not really true. There is actually a lot of amazing artists in there, just as there were amazing baseball players in the Negro Baseball Leagues. They just couldn't make their way out into the mainstream side and really be heard by the world. And so that's why I wrote a bunch of books and a bunch of articles. And, you know, to be honest, I'm a little bit angry at what happened to a lot of these artists, especially in the 70s. An artist like Phil Keaggy, who is really one of the world's most amazing guitar players. But when people talk about the 70s, they talk about, you know, Peter Frampton and Elton John, and nobody mentions Phil Keaggy because he just didn't have an impact on our culture like he should have. And so I think our culture has lost a lot over the last 30 years by having these amazing artists that never got heard for, you know, really dumb reasons that have to do with marketing and distribution. So I can't say that every artist that we will sign to our label will be, you know, a person of faith, as Molly is, but I certainly, you know, one of my goals is to be able to have amazing artists heard wherever their background is and not be shuffled off to one audience only.
Yeah. It seems like we kind of got a start. I mean, we got off to the right start with people like Larry Norman, who, you know, really had, you know, he was playing stages with Janis Joplin and other folks, but then we kind of sequestered ourselves.
Yeah, well, you know, I think the problem is when the business guys, the marketing guys come in, because it is true that, you know, the easiest way to market people is to find people that are just like them and sell stuff to them. But that's, you know, that's not what we're supposed to be about, I don't think. You know, for those that are that their faith is important to them, I don't think that Jesus was into niche marketing. He, you know, part of the Great Commission is about taking things to people that are not interested naturally. So, but you're right. Larry Norman was signed to MGM, and he was, you know, out there, and just the marketing machine took over. And I have lots of friends in that world, and some of them, you know, are supportive, and certainly. We're glad, I mean, I'm glad that that world existed for a while, and I hope that in the future there can be a different model.
Yeah. Now, what do you think about the whole concept? I think one that, you know, maybe this is, I don't know, this is something that irritates me, and it's kind of the, what I see in the Christian labels producing a Christian artist, and then they say, you know, I need you to put one song out there. We need to at least have one song that has the ability to cross over. Or we're going to just try to market the life out of it and put it somewhere, or do whatever we can to make all these marketing-based decisions that are basically alliances and partnerships to, you know, market XYZ product or something. And like one good example is, and maybe you can give me your take on this, a coworker and I were just talking yesterday about how, is it You Found Me?
Yeah.
That song. Is on like every Christian station right now.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think about that? I mean, is that good for the fray to be out there on the CCM stations now, or is that just these radio stations that are just like, let's legitimize ourselves by playing a Fray song?
I'm sure there's some of that too. I just think that in the new model, I don't think it has to be an adversarial relationship. And so I think it's fine that they want to do that. And, the main thing is, I don't want to have put A&R pressure on Molly. I've never, you know, what I don't like is the kind of sitting down and saying, okay, we need you to say the word Jesus six times in the song so we'll get radio airplay. You know, there's a line in one of Molly's songs, Maybe Tomorrow, that says she's talking to a friend and she says, I think I figured Jesus out. And that comes from a place that, you know, her faith is so interwoven in her life that it just pops out. And it's not something that somebody told her to write or put pressure on for radio. And so I would rather that when her face comes out, it just comes out naturally and it's not forced or a gimmicky.
Yeah. No, that's great. Molly, have you found yourself, you know, obviously, like we said before, you were in the biz a while ago. You've been in it for a while. Did you see that pressure of, you know, what am I going to do? How am I going to straddle this line? And how am I going to be true to myself and my art while at the same time speaking a message that for me is real?
No. I feel like I've always been really adamant about wanting to write what I feel I need to write and never writing something that somebody else wants me to write. So I've never felt that pressure at all, and Mark's done a very good job at, you know, of talking me through it and, you know, letting me write about the things I need to write about.
Sure. Okay. Now, obviously, Molly, we're going to be checking out your album for sure. But from both of you, just opinions, who are some of the best songwriters out there today?
You go. I can't believe it.
It's like at a restaurant when you're asked to order, and people go, no, you order first. You talked about some artists that I had worked with. I almost had the chance to work with Bob Dylan. He actually was, when I produced the Passion of the Christ soundtrack, I asked if he would give us a song, and particularly I knew that Rock of Ages was his favorite song, and so, believe it or not, if you can believe this, this is a world first, but he was going to give us a song for the CD, and the record label vetoed my idea. So I had the difficult task of calling Bob Dylan's agent and saying, we can't have you on the CD. But I think that Bob Dylan is, you know, probably the greatest songwriter of our generation, and he doesn't read or write music, but he just feels it in his soul, and so I think that he would be my favorite of all time.
Well, that's your generation. Then for my generation, I'd have to say John Foreman. I think he's such an amazing writer, and mm-hmm. you know, he's always throwing songs out, and it's easy for him, but they're also always quite profound.
Yeah.
I'm always impressed writing with him.
I remember when I bought The Beautiful Letdown, I was driving up into the mountains, and I think I played 24, I played that nonstop for about an hour and a half. I think I just kept hitting repeat, repeat, repeat. Yeah, that song. And I actually asked this on Facebook probably a month or so ago, asking people to post what they thought were some of the best lyrics of all time. And I know Bob Dylan came up at least twice on comments. So that's
everyone's
pretty.
Everyone's going to say Bob Dylan.
Yeah.
Everybody.
Everyone loves Bob Dylan. I also love that, speaking of Sixpence, Mark, since you worked with them, I love the Melody of You song.
Are you kidding me? I just told Molly that that's one of the greatest songs ever written.
That is a great song, and it has amazing lyrics. The metaphors in there are fantastic. I'm a writer by trade, and I love it.
Yeah, I worked with Matt and Lee for almost over 10 years, and I think that's probably the greatest song Matt has ever written. Every line, it's like a masterpiece work of art.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he managed to use words like thimble, and I'm not crazy. I have four daughters under the age of eight, and we don't listen to worship music, but we listen to hymns.
Yeah.
And that's just kind of my feeling about worship music. But that song is probably, you know, the most worshipful song that I've heard in a generation that Matt wrote.
Yeah. That line, you know, that Christ is a simple tune that I only write variations to.
Right.
Is I mean, that's like such a huge chunk of theology right there. It's just amazing.
I sent the lyrics to Molly last week, I think, and I was saying, this is an example of just great lyrics, and it'd be great if you could write with Matt. And that's funny that you picked up that song, because it is kind of overlooked in their catalog of songs.
Yeah. Well, and that's what I'm saying. It speaks so well to this conversation because, you know, we have everyone blaring out Kiss Me all the time, which is a great song, too, and very fun, you know, or the There She Goes. But to look deeper than that, you're going to get some amazing stuff out of them. So, well, I want to make sure that we talk again, that I just mention Molly Jensen, and that's jenson.com. That is where you can get some more info about the album. And of course, Molly is also on MySpace, so make sure you look her up on there. So we want to make sure that we give you information about the music, and we'll have information at boundless.org as well. So the album by Molly Jensen, Maybe Tomorrow, is available everywhere. Find out more information about Molly herself at mollyjensen.com or at MySpace. And then write to us at editor@boundless.org and let us know what you think about the album. We'd love to pass that on to both Mark and Molly, and we want to support her wherever she is, out and about touring. And you've gotten quite the friends there overseas, though, Molly. I heard about Japan and London, and so don't forget us here in the U.S.
Come on, I promise.
Okay, well, thank you both for being here today.
Thank you.
I think
shall live as one who's learned compassion. I've been so loved that I'll risk loving too. I know how fear built walls instead of bridges. I'll dare.
You are not even going to believe this because I don't even believe it myself, but I'm actually sitting in a room here in Colorado Springs with Bill Gaither. I have, now I'm the youngest of six kids, Bill.
Yeah.
And so when I grew up, you know, we're talking like early 70s when we started listening to your records. And I'm not going to brag, but, or I don't want it to sound like bragging, but quite frankly it is. And that is that when I was 5 years old, I sang "Jesus, I Heard You Had a Big House" in my little church in Minnesota.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to say that I brought down the house, but it was close, okay? And ever since then, I've wanted to tour with you, and I have not had any invitations up to this point, and I'm a little bitter about that.
Well, but I see a bus in your future.
We'll see. Maybe I can show up for a future audition or do something like that. So, well, obviously, just thrilled to have you here in Colorado Springs, and obviously as a part of the show itself. Tell us a little bit, first of all, for those who don't know what a homecoming is, because lots of people in our listenership go to concerts, yeah. But what really makes a homecoming unique?
You know, Lisa, it was interesting. Gloria and I you know, have been married for 45 years. And
we support that at the Boundless Show.
Living by a set of rules that I would not recommend to anybody else. We haven't killed each other so far. Two explosive, artistic people under the same roof, raising three kids. Now I've got six grandkids. And the kids still think the house is a hoot. We still live in the same place we lived in when we taught school. We rented the first 2 years, and then we built this house. And in fact, Jim and Shirley Dobson have been in our home. Mm-hmm. They were there right before he wrote Hide and Seek, so we go way, way back.
Oh, wow. And that's Anderson, right? Indiana?
That's in Alexandria. Okay. It's just a little town north of Anderson.
Which is another, my last name is Anderson, so I just had to throw that. So that's another connection. Yeah. I'm going to start counting our connections, just FYI.
Well,
that's at least three so far.
Starting with Jesus, I heard, had a big house. By the way, did you sing I'm a Promise, I'm a Possibility, I'm a Promise?
I wanted to sing that one too, but my two friends, Naomi and Rebecca, beat me to it. I haven't forgiven them for it yet, but I wanted
get
to.
Get over it.
I know. I may do it next week in church. I mean, who knows? I'm going to bust it out and just sing. So we'll see.
But at any rate, we were teaching school, started writing our songs, and really felt like we weren't that good as singers. Glory and I weren't, but we wanted to get our songs to other people. And I'll make this the short version, because you don't have that much time. I got all the time in the world. But so we started singing our tunes. The tunes started catching on, and we never felt like vocally we were really what we wanted to be, but people liked us because they liked our songs, and, you know, and we knew that. My brother could sing, and so we would let him do most of the solo stuff, and then Gloria and I would just, be charming and stuff like that that you're supposed to do on the stage to get the folks to like what you're doing, you know, and sell them your new ideas, ideas that we thought could be life-changing and could make a difference, you know, in their living. And that motivated us from the very beginning. So we went through all of that. And then we got to the end, somewhere in the 80s, of the trio's performing existence. And out of our backup group, I wanted to form a quartet because I grew up loving four-part male harmony. Mm-hmm. Gloria still does not understand this, but there is something about four-part male harmony that is spiritual. Mm-hmm. And she doesn't buy that, but there is something special. And you know, I can remember going to the Music Man and hearing the barbershop quartet mm-hmm. sing Lighter Rose, and the whole crowd pricking their ears up because there is something about the four-part harmony. But at any rate, so the vocal band started to happen. And then we got together on one project and wanted to bring in our old heroes. That had been a big influence on our lives when we were growing up in the late 50s and 60s, or at least in my life. Now, the rest of the vocal band were younger, but we're still influenced by Howard and Vestal Goodman and Jake Hess of the Old Statesman, people like that. So we did the first homecoming video just as a fluke, because we love these guys.
Mm-hmm. You were really just all standing around a piano, yeah. And someone happened to have a video camera and started taping. Yeah. And you didn't think it was going to become what it has. So.
And to be honest with you, I had not done much TV up to that point, mainly because I didn't like it. TV made strange folks out of regular people, you know, mm-hmm. with all the preparation. And so because we weren't trying to do TV, the cameras were just there. To get one song, the song was the old gospel tune, Where Could I Go But to the Lord? And we got that, a concept video, and then took a break and came back and took a picture and then started singing around the piano.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody said, I learned to love music singing around the piano in the parlor. Now, today I suppose it'd be a guitar, but mm-hmm. And I often tell the young artists, and I've told this to Michael W. and the younger contemporary artists, I said, I dare you to write some songs. At 40 or 50 years from now, you'll gather around a piano or a guitar, and it will create instant community.
Mm-hmm.
And people will say, I've come home.
Mm-hmm.
This is wonderful.
What makes the experience of a homecoming, or and maybe you can talk to this a little bit, of coming to a homecoming like tonight, mm-hmm. what makes that unique?
I think there's something Christian about it from this perspective. you know, the Lord taught us that we are at our best when we're washing feet, when we are serving others. And, you know, and I've been in the field of Christian music for, you know, 50 years now, if you want to go clear back to college. And that's a fine line to walk. Somebody asked Colby Lister, the Old Statesman, do you consider what you do entertainment or ministry? To which he answered, yes, next question.
Mm-hmm.
Because obviously tonight is going to be a whole lot of fun. I mean, it's, I suppose that's called entertainment. Mm-hmm. I don't know. And you know what? I think ministry is really left in the hands of the Lord, because I don't think a lot of times we know what ministry is. Maybe the laughing is a ministry. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe hearing a beautiful four-part harmony song is the ministry. And maybe it's a lyric that says, I don't care how tough it is, God can get you through this time. I've often told Andre Crouch, my dear friend, I still think one of the greatest gospel songs ever written is his song, Through It All.
Mm-hmm.
Through It All, I've learned to trust. You know,
it
didn't say anything was changed, but it did say through it, you know, I learned trust. And so it's an interesting night in that I have explained to the people who have participated with this many times, this is not about you, it's not about me. It's about all of us together glorifying Him. And when that happens, wonderful things happen.
Mm-hmm.
This is great, and I've tried to pass it on to the younger artists that I've been involved with. And we've had some of those younger artists, like on the Billy Graham homecoming experience that we had. But it is a coming together and laying down egos, because there has to be egos involved to do what we do, I guess. And I have often said, there's nothing wrong with an ego. Just make sure you get it sanctified somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
So God, because I guess ego means drive. You know, do.
Yeah.
But if you didn't have some, it wouldn't happen. But I really think we do a pretty good job of telling folks who are on our stage, hey, let's just have a good time tonight.
Sure. Now you are, and I know a lot of the old quartets are known for this, and Southern gospel in general, and especially you and the songs that you've written. You're not afraid to sing about heaven, and you're not afraid to sing. You know, and it seems like, you know, that's something that I just love about the homecomings and just about your music. Why do you think that is so unique? Just looking forward to heaven and what, you know.
Very good question. I don't think it's so much looking forward to heaven, but I think it is a matter of eternal values.
Mm-hmm.
And Jesus said a lot about this, about where are you laying up your treasures? And I do think it's a matter of reminding people, and listen carefully here, this world is not our home. We are just passing through. Now, does that mean that we don't care about the earth? We're here in Colorado where people are very sensitive about the environment and all that.
Mm-hmm.
I think Christians ought to be the most caring about the environment, you know, and social concerns and all of that. But it does mean this. I think when you get a good theology developed in your soul, in your minds, about the life hereafter, you've got a pretty doggone good theology for living life. Because as the Apostle Paul said, and I don't want to go preaching here, but for me to live is Christ and die is gain. I mean, you can't kill a guy like that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's a pretty tough, healthy theology. Now, that doesn't mean that he was, you know, looking forward to dying that night, but he was saying, it doesn't scare me.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not so sure I'm at the place where death is still a frightening thing. I've sat by the bedside of too many of my dear friends, you know. That's still a frightening thing. But at the same time, I think if we really believe this stuff that we say that we believe, that we can sing with confidence, because he lives, I can face tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
Because he lives, fear is gone.
Mm-hmm.
Because I know, I mean, we are in his hands. And there's not much we can do about it. Had a dear old friend who was the retired president of Anderson University, Robert Reardon, 87 years old. He and his wife had been married for 62 years. She had died a couple years earlier. And he found out he had pancreatic cancer. He said, what are you going to do about it, Dr. Reardon? He said, nothing. Hmm. He said, at 87, I've had 87 great years. And And I've got, they say, I've got 6 or 7 months to live, and I'm going to have a good time getting my house in order. And I watched him die for 6 or 7, it was about 6, 7 months.
Hmm.
And I said, you know, Tuesday mornings with Maury had nothing on my dear friend, Dr. Rudin, because here's a guy, and this was the youngest 87-year-old that you would ever be around. His mind was so young. He loved life. Mm-hmm. He loved the newest thing going on.
Mm-hmm.
It has nothing to do with age, but I think the people who have developed a good theology of eternity, of what is eternal,
mm-hmm.
and I don't know what heaven's going to be. We only have earthly words to describe it. But there's something about getting that in place. When we get that in place, then I think we're ready to live like we've got nothing to lose.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
That does, yeah. Well, and that, and this may be, you may have just answered my next question, but maybe you can add to it too. Knowing that, and knowing that there are thousands of young adults listening here, and you've had, well, you know, 50 years at least in the music business and writing music and have lived as a believer and lived out your testimony in so many ways. What would you say if you had 15 minutes to sit down with Christian young adults today and really had to put out really the few things that are most important as they look ahead to life and they're trying to figure out their careers, they're trying to figure out relationships and marriage, a purpose in life, what God would have them do, how to live out a ministry and a worldview that matters. What would be your advice to them?
You know, most people either live in the past or they live in the future. Very few young or old live in the now. The young are very guilty of, well, as soon as I get grad school done or mm-hmm. as soon as I get the kid race, or as soon as I get, you know, get that out of your vocabulary.
Mm-hmm.
The important thing is what has happened today. I mean, you know, I didn't know you until a few minutes ago, and you know,
which is a tragedy.
But so. You know, friendships and relationships go on forever and forever and forever. And Gloria and I have been around long enough now that our circle is so wide. It's a beautiful family to get. The family of God is just a wonderful, beautiful family. So I would say to them, yes, you have to think about tomorrow, but currently with the stock market the way it is, for some of us who have put some money back, you know, if our confidence was there, I mean, right now, mm-hmm. it's about 30 or 40% less than what it was. Back to the eternal values thing. And I think my old buddy Stuart Hamlin, the old cowboy, said it the best when he said, the things of earth will dim and lose their value. If we recall, they're just borrowed for a while. And things of earth that cause the heart to tremble, remembered there, will only bring a smile. And I don't care whether you're 25 or 45 or 65 or in my case, 72. The problem is we get bogged down on things.
Mm-hmm.
And my dad would always say to me, oh, Bill, it's probably not as bad as you think it is. And then he'd wait a second and say, and it probably wasn't as good as you thought it was.
Hmm.
And to young people, because I travel with young people. I mean, I travel mm-hmm. with 30, 35, and 40-year-olds. And it's fun for me to say, get it in perspective. You know, yes, it's important. And sometimes, I'm talking about life-threatening things. I'm talking about career-threatening things. Sometimes, I'm even talking about things that they're afraid if it got out, mm-hmm. it might ruin them forever,
mm-hmm.
you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I've said to them, one of these days you will look back and you will say, well, it was bad. And I can't say that it was just a bump in the road. It was a big bump in the road. But it wasn't the end.
Hmm.
And I think when we figure out, young or old, the difference between our endings and our beginnings, the alphas and the omegas, because many times what we think is an ending is only a beginning to something else fantastic.
Sure. That's great. Okay. So now we're going to tackle just a few true confessions here.
Okay.
And that is... music that you listen to besides Southern Gospel. What are some of your tops?
I'm a classical nut,
and
I was exposed to classical music when I was in college, and when I first heard it, I loved the structure, And when I started listening, I thought, boy, those guys were not only good, they were really good. And to think they were writing all this stuff down, just hearing it in their head and writing it down on a piece of paper. When we go, most of our creating is done in the studio. Mm-hmm. We go in, we play licks. I say we, the good musicians do. Gordon Moat will be with us tonight, who can really play licks.
Oh, yeah.
And, we get grooves going, and pretty soon it becomes creative and some wonderful stuff comes out of it. But I listen to classical. And I'll listen to some country, because in country music there are still stories that are told. And I even love traditional country. I saw the other day in his handwriting a copy of I'm So Lonesome I Could Cry, written by Hank Williams. He died back in 1951, 52, I think. Hank Williams Sr. See, what other kind of music do I like? I still love great choral stuff.
Oh, sure.
I love great harmony.
Okay. Not a lot of hip-hop or...
No, and I'm not saying it's bad. I just don't know that much about it.
Mm-hmm.
And I long to hear some musical notes rather than just
a backbeat or...
I know how you create that kind of thing.
If you brought me on tour, maybe I could marry Southern gospel with hip-hop. I'm just saying it's one of my gifts.
Is that what you do, Lisa?
It is. It's one of my, when I'm not at focus, it's
You're real cool.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know about that. So, okay. Musical styles, yeah. This is where you can just be honest with us here at the Boundless team. Who on the tour of these guys that you work with just... quite frankly, just irritates you. I mean, just, you know, I know Kevin gives you grief.
Yeah. Well, he's paid to do that. You know, when Mark left, I figured out a long time ago that we have so much time on this stage of lifetime. And you can either take yourself so seriously that you become a bore to everybody, or start laughing at yourself before everybody else has the chance to do that. And I don't know where that started happening with me, but I think it happened way back when I sang with my brother. We would go into these little churches, and I would introduce my brother and sister. This is my little sister. This is my brother. And my name is Bill. I'm the older brother. A lot of people ask, because my brother was very good looking, a lot of people say, is your brother single? I would say, yes, he's single. And I wait for a second and say, and I am too. And obviously, the girls are more interested in my brother than they were in me. But it worked. And so he said, hey, they kind of like you making fun of yourself.
Mm-hmm.
So who irritates me? You know what? Nobody really irritates me. It's a pretty good bunch, to be honest with you.
Do you ever find yourself just jealous of Guy Penrod's hair?
Not really.
No. I mean, honestly, like what does he do to maintain it? I don't even know. He must have hair products that he uses.
He doesn't do much.
He doesn't.
He just lets it go.
Oh, that's good. Yeah. That's good. Yeah. Okay. Are there any, which actually brings me to my next question. I mean, seriously, are there any single guys on this tour? Because my friends and I need to be hooked up.
Are there any single guys on the tour?
I mean, can you help us single girls out?
There are probably some musicians who are single. I don't know whether there are any performers or singers, but I know there would be some single musicians. So, Lisa, give me a time, and I'll make the list up between now and the time we go on the stage.
If you could just do an Excel spreadsheet, and you know, you can get it to me just with a list, and maybe just any dysfunctions that they have, so I can weed through that and see if I would be able to.
Now you have to understand
to deal with that.
When you come into the artistic community, it's like there are landmines out there, so you have to be careful.
That's true. Okay, favorite song that you never get tired of singing.
Favorite song that, I mentioned one earlier, Through It All.
Mm-hmm. Which, incidentally, I have to mention another connection. I sang that song with a friend of mine in church in seventh grade, and then my mom said afterwards, what have you been through? Why did you even sing this song? So she still gives me a hard time to this day that my junior high friend and I sang Through It All for an offertory at church.
That is probably a little young for you to do, but I tell you what,
for a questionable
for a person who's lived long enough, and doesn't have to be old, but But I'll never forget the first night we sang that. There was a young black couple about three or four rows out. It was back during the days where the lights were still on in the crowd and we could see. And I looked out there, and this young black couple with the beautiful little young baby, when we got to the chorus, through it all, I saw him take her hand and put his hand in, and it tore me up, you know, just to say, evidently that's a blank. The most important word in that song, there are two, through is an important word, but it is a very important word. Your mother asked the right question, what have you been through? Mm-hmm. What is the it? Well, you've lived long enough now that you could probably put a few blanks in there.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's true. Okay. So,
okay. What else do I never get tired of singing? I don't ever get tired of singing it. It is finished.
Mm-hmm.
Because I like the last verse application, because it's an important part of my glorious theology. Yet in my heart the battle was raging. Not all prisoners of war had come home. These were battlefields of my own making. I didn't know that the war had been won. Then I heard that the King of the Ages had fought all the battles for me, and that victory was mine for the claiming. And now I'll praise his name. I am free. It is finished. The battle is over. I think good theology is also good psychology. I think they go hand in hand. And good theology finally says, it's me, O Lord, standing in need of prayer. It's not my mother, it's not my father, you know. They were battlefields of my own making. And I could sing that every night and say, listen, this can change your life.
There's a line that is drawn through the ages. On that line stands an old rugged cross. On that cross, a battle is raging. For the gain of man's soul, or his loss. On one side march the forces of evil. All the demons and all the devils of hell. But on the other, the angels of glory, and they meet on Golgotha's hill. The earth shakes with the force of the conflict, and the sun, it refuses to shine. For there hangs God's Son in the balance. And then through the darkness he cried,
it is finished, the battle is over. It is finished.
These were battlefields of my
Okay, can I get a witness, folks, after hearing those two interviews, the second half of our Artist Roundup series this summer, as we're just taking a break from yakking, although I'm doing a lot of yakking here, but I have to because I'm so excited about these people. Write to us, editor@boundless.org. I want to hear this week, especially your testimonies of how Bill Gaither and his ministry has changed your life, especially since I introduced you to him. We also want to hear your thoughts on Molly because she's a new artist and we like her. So, and maybe she will sing with Bill Gaither at some point. We just don't know, folks. We don't know what the Lord will do in these situations, okay? So be up for that. editor@boundless.org, write to me, write to us. We will be back to our normal programming, which really is never normal, but whatever, our regular schedule. Next week, I hope you're having a fabulous summer. I hope you are ready to tell us about your summers because we're going to want to be hearing about that in a few weeks. Until then, listen to the music, get the music, buy the music. You'll find links to all these folks on the blog, so make sure you check them out. And we will see you around next time. I'm your host, Lisa Anderson, for The Boundless Show.
The Boundless Show is a production of Boundless.org. Focus on the family.